Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and a San Francisco's blazing beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
This is episode 48, everyone.
All right, 48. We are just four more episodes from that year mark, girl.
I know. That means she's all over here excited. To me, I'm like, oh, girl, that means I'm going to have to go through, like, all those old episodes and try to find some good stuff.
Yes, girl. That means I get a night off.
Oh, whatever, you bitch. She's like, yes, just heap on that pressure for yourself.
Right.
So it was a very busy weekend for me. We did a big show on Saturday at Mother. It was the debut of my alter ego, Snatch Gordon, savior of the universe. Snatch!
You know what? I saw the video.
Did you?
I saw the video.
The lighting is dreadful, but we really enjoyed the performance. Yeah.
You guys look like you put a lot of work into it, say the least.
It was very fun, and I got to work with Chloe Cocaine, Monica Mars Foster, Intensive Claire, and Ginorma Desmond. That was my cast of five.
You kind of switched it up a little bit from your usual, like, cast of girls that you usually work with.
Well, I wanted MGM Grand to be in it, but she was doing her own number, so come through, MGM.
Chloe.
No, I mean, yeah. I had talked to Chloe and Sayani at Christmas time about being in it, and initially I wanted the number to be much bigger, but girls and boys who are listening, it's almost impossible to get people to rehearse at the same time in this city. So some of the issues that we had with the number basically just came down to the fact that we had five people in the number, and I had to choreograph pieces with individuals, so like wherever they overlap, the pieces overlap.
And you guys
overlap.
Have to realize that Pollo's not a dancer, so when she says choreograph, she means like...
Well, I mean, it wasn't a choreographed dance number, it was a choreographed skit number, you guys. So everybody had individual pieces of a skit that told a really fun story. It was very stupid, and I enjoyed it. It was like, to me, it felt like a return to the kind of drag we used to do back in the day.
All right.
And how did you spend your weekend?
My weekend, girl, this storm.
Yeah, this storm is really getting us together.
You, girl, at all. So Saturday, though, I went to it's a queer people of color party. So
okay.
It was just like a safe space for queer people of color to kind of get together and eat and kind of like celebrate each other and mingle and talk about issues and stuff that's kind of like on our minds and not be judged by people outside of that spectrum, which was really nice.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was great. Like, I've never been to, like, a gathering specifically for that before, and I am kind of sad that I missed out on all that before. Like, I wish I've been introduced to, like, spaces like that or events like that sooner. Better late than ever, girl.
Exactly.
But the food was great. The people were great. The conversations were great. I met some really cool people, some new friends, you know. Other than that, I am finally no longer part of House of Pride Radio.
Okay.
I finally split. I think, oh, wait, no, I quit a couple weeks ago. Actually,
yeah, but you didn't tell.
I didn't tell you guys. Which is so good because I'm going to have more time for just, like, myself and, like, to do things like go to these kind of, like, events outside of the city and stuff like that and just to do other projects.
You were with House of Pride Radio for...
Like 3 years.
3 years.
Three
okay.
plus years. And it was great. I've met a lot of good people there also. And it was such a journey working with Tweeka, and I wish her the best of luck. She actually reached out to me this weekend to see if I would do another couple months, if she has someone to sponsor me for it. But I was like, girl, I seriously need this time for myself. But,
cool. Well, great.
Yeah.
Of course, we wish Tweeka Turner and House of Pride Radio the best of luck as they continue on. Like I said, 3 years is nothing to sneeze at, girl, doing that show. So that's fantastic. I don't want to go into it too greatly, but I did make a post about it on Facebook, and Monday was the anniversary of my father passing away.
Oh, wow.
2 years ago, and it was really weird for me, actually, this year, because the first year, when it first happened, I almost had no emotional response to it at all.
Like, were you and your father close?
We had become fairly close, like, over the previous 10 years. The first year, 30-some years of my life, it was pretty strange. But the last 10 years of his life were the best it could possibly be. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't amazing, but it was good, and I felt very comfortable with that relationship. The first year when he first passed away, I, like, had almost no emotions because I got the call. It was very unexpected, and I just went into action mode. Like, I got to get home. I got to take care of his funeral. I got to take care of my family, and, like, we had to take care of his wife and all this stuff. So there was that, and then I came back thinking, like, okay, well, when I get back, it'll probably, like, start to settle in, and I'll start to grieve or whatever eventually. But first, I had to go to Mexico, and then when I was in Mexico, that's when Cookie died. So my dad died, and then literally 1 week to the day from the time that we planned his funeral, Cookie went into her coma, and so it was just so much. So there was no opportunity really for me to deal with any of that emotionally. And then the first year after that, like 1 year anniversary, I was like, oh, I thought about it a little bit, but this year it had a little bit more of an emotional impact on me. I was like surrounded by some friends on Monday afternoon, and I was just kept like tearing up a little bit. It was very, very strange. I'm hoping that eventually over time, like, it'll all process itself out, you know, and I'll actually have the opportunity to deal with it. But I do want to wish all of the people on Facebook who sent me, you know, sweet and kind messages of comfort and condolence. I definitely appreciate that.
Where's, like, his burial set?
How about don't even get me started. His wife was like, oh, I'll take care of that and blah, 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 blah. She never did. And she never did. He never had a memorial service, which she was supposed to organize. Nope, nothing. He never had any kind of a formal whatever. Nothing. I mean, he was cremated. He's, like, my sister has...
And where is he?
He's just in the yard. We just left him. No. No. My sister has his remains. He's in an urn, and my sister has his remains. And we were even afraid almost that there was going to be some contention about that. Like,
Are you kidding me, though? I would haunt a bitch if she didn't.
My stepmother is, like, a real piece of work. And the thing is, like, their relationship was what it was, you know, and I didn't get into it. It was not ideal. Both my father and she have, like, some issues or whatever.
Whatever. That's played out. Respect for.
But, you know, I felt bad for her at first. And then she just sort of, like, kind of went off the deep end. And we've cut all ties with her, which is really sad because they were married for, like, 22 or 23 years, something like that. Yeah, so it's just like, you know, it just got all bad. I think I mentioned that, like, she was staying with my sister after my father passed away, and after, like, 6 months, my sister was like, hey, Gail, maybe we should, like, look into getting you your own apartment. You know, like, I can take you, we can look at places, and her response was, oh, I can tell when I'm not wanted. You're just trying to throw me out. My sister's like, we're not throwing you out. You've been here 6 months, and we're actually just trying to, like, help you get settled in your own place. So maybe you could, like, feel a little bit like you could live on your own or whatever, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it turned out really ugly, and we haven't spoken. We've lost all contact with her. So
maybe good for you.
Yeah, I'm none of us are, like, really crying about it, but it's it was sad how it went down because...
How old is this woman?
In her, like... In her late 60s.
Oh, so your dad went young.
No, she was older than my dad. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your dad had you at a very young age.
My dad had me when he was 20.
More like 12, girl.
My dad had... My dad had me when he was 20.
12.
And my mom was 16. They got married, and I was... They got married in the summer, and I was born in the winter, like in the next, like the next year, calendar year. Yeah. So my parents were both very young. My dad passed away when he had just turned 62.
Okay.
So his birthday was in December, and then he passed away less than 1 month after his birthday. And
wait a minute. That's how you know. Okay, so she said he was 20 years old.
Yep. Do the math, bitch. Go on, Yahar.
And he was 62?
He had just turned 62 when he passed away.
And that means...
That was two years ago.
That would make you at least 44. But I swear, two episodes ago, you said you was like 42.
Girl, I am 43.
Oh, no.
And I will be 44 at the end of the month. Girl, we've already established many moons ago that you are very bad at math. So
whatever.
My dad had me when he was 20.
Oh, girl, here she go. It doesn't matter, girl.
He had turned 40 or 62.
Buy those lies.
He had just turned 62. He passed away, and then, like 3 weeks later, 3 weeks and one day exactly later, I turned 42. He passed away 2 years ago, which means that I'm coming up in 3 weeks and one day from the day he passed away to be 44.
54.
Girl, whatever. let Sexy D, my mom, hear that I'm like that I'm 54, because that means that she'd be 70, and she's going to come up here and be like, Perliqua? So,
girl.
Anyway, you guys, I also want to let you know, like, when Pearl was talking about going to this gathering for people of, like, queer people of color, that, you know, she was saying that she has the opportunity to converse with people of a like mind or whatever, and we always want to represent, like, as many facets of the LGBTQ community as we can, and we are always noticeably lacking in our lesbian representation, so
yeah.
Over the next several months, the Dinosaur Weekend, you know, that's, like, the white party for lesbians,
yes, girl.
Is coming up in, like, March or April.
Y'all need to invite me, I mean.
And we are going to be having, in between now and then, I'm working to have almost every major performer who's going to be at the Dinosaur on with us, as well as the producer of the Dinosaur, Mariah Hansen. We will be having... The first female guest that we're going to be having very shortly, either maybe this episode or next episode, we might have to push her back to next week, depending, because we've got some crazy amounts of interviews this week.
Right.
Her story is so compelling. Like, I wasn't really super familiar with her work, but her story is so compelling. Her name is Susan Surftone, and she is a surf rock guitar player, right? So she makes this music. But
a surf rock guitar player.
Right.
I don't even know what that is.
I'll let her listen to some what surf rock music is. Oh, that era. Cute. But get this. Before she did this, she had a job working for the FBI, tracking down Russian, like, spies in the United States, and she quit that because she wanted to make music. I was like, okay, this is a kind of compelling story. So,
all right.
So I just thought, girl, we're going to have to check this out, bitch. So Susan Surftone will be up with us. Mariah Hansen, who is the originator of the Dinosaur Weekend and producer every year for many, many years of that weekend, will also be joining us at some point. I'm also working on getting some really fun guests, like the iconic 80s, 70s and 80s television personality and actress Lonnie Anderson. Do you know who Lonnie Anderson is?
No.
You're too young. Lonnie Anderson and Burt Reynolds were like the super couple of the early 80s. And she was on this, TV show called...
Yeah, I wasn't even born in the early 80s, bro.
WKRP in Cincinnati. That's where I want to kick her in the coont, by the way. So Lonnie Anderson's actually going to be on a new TV show called My Sister is So Gay. And
oh, wow.
So it'd be really cool to have her on. And get this, you guys. So I'm really working on getting us this very bizarre... I was telling Pearl just a tiny bit about this, just a teaser before we came on the air. So earlier today, I was trying to take an Uber, right? And I could not get the fucking app. It kept telling me I had an invalid request. For like several days it's been
doing
this.
Girl, that card was declining.
No, girl. And trust, like, she says that jokingly and, like, snarkily, but... Girl, I sure did go and check and make sure that it was... I sure did. I was like, let me just double check.
Right.
So, but no, it was just saying that, like, I couldn't even request it. It wasn't saying it was, like, declined. It was saying that the request was invalid or whatever. So I kept messaging them on Twitter, like, hey, Uber, like, I'm trying to take an Uber and
wait, time out. When you have an issue with an app, the first thing you do is go to Twitter
Yeah, girl.
Really? I would have went to their website or their contact and contacted customer support.
I did go through and look for the customer support, but there isn't any. So I sure did go on Twitter and tweet them. It was like, hey,
Uber
I need customer...
Uber doesn't have customer support?
I, not that I could find any.
I don't believe that. I'm going to get on my phone right now.
Let her look, because I didn't find it. I just went on the app. I was looking at the app and whatever. So I tweeted them, and I was like, hey, Uber, I need help or whatever. So then they didn't respond, and it was, like, pissing me off, because while I was having an issue with Uber, the cost of a Lyft was legitimately double what the cost of the Uber was. And I was like, oh, hell to the no. So anyway, I got spawned on Twitter. Please direct messages with your problem. And so I respond back. I was like, the last time you guys told me to do this, you told me to log out and log back in, which I have done so many times. I said, I've crossed over so many times that John Edward, the medium, started talking to me. Pearl remembers John Edward. He has this, he's a psychic. He had his own television show. It was called John Edwards Crossing Over. He would, like, contact spirits or whatever. So I tweet, like, I've crossed over so many times. John Edward is talking to me. Girl, how come he responded back to my tweet?
That's everything.
He was like, that's very witty. And then I said, ooh, girl, John Edward really is talking to me now.
I love.
I said, now that you've responded, we need to get you for an interview. And he tweeted back and said, I'm in.
I love it.
So we're going to try to get the psychic John Edward on. I think that'd be so...
That'd be everything, girl.
It would be very
interesting. I want a psychic reading. Yes.
Girl, she's just tired of my reading, bitch. She wants to give me a psychic reading.
Right. For real.
She got every reading. Do you see anything for Uber support?
Yeah, so there's a link where you can either email them, or their number is 800... 353 Uber.
Okay, well, I didn't need to know all that.
Right.
And I sure
looked at the app.
I sure did look at the app, and I sure did tweet them. And they were like, we don't see anything wrong. I had to, like, log my phone completely off and then restart. And I downloaded the app anew. It was a mess. Whatever. Ultimately, something good came out of it, though, because we possibly could have an interview with John Edward, the psychic.
That's everything.
So
big mouth. I love it.
I know, right? I get it's in the best kind of trouble, girl. Right. So. This episode, we are going to have a lot of interviews, you guys. So, we thought, initially, we had booked Nebraska Thunderfuck.
Come on, Nebraska.
So we all got the opportunity to see Nebraska Thunderfuck born on RuPaul's Drag Race in the episode where Alaska makes over a person as her little sister. Well, now he is a professional drag queen, Nebraska Thunderfuck. And he is in a triad relationship with Derek Barry, and... When we booked Nebraska, I had no idea that he was planning to have Derek and their part. It's the whole three of them, girl. So all three of them are going to be joining us for a conversation which could get potentially really confusing. I hope they don't answer, but maybe I do hope they answer for each other so it's easier to figure out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be coming up. We're going to have... The funny thing is I was like, when Nebraska was like, what time did Derek, Nick, and I call in today or whatever? So I told him and gave him the number. And everything, and I said, I didn't expect to get a threefer deal, and she said, we are like Mormon wolves. We travel in packs.
Oh, my God.
Sister wives. Mormons with sister wives, girls, in a pack.
And, girl, just so it's clear, not, because I'm polyamorous, too, not all polyamorous relationships are going to be like this. Just so you guys know, because a lot of times people just think, people get so confused when the word polyamory comes up, they don't know what the hell to expect.
Well, I don't know what to expect because I don't play well with others, really. So, I'm like, it'll be very interesting to have...
This is why she's single.
But, girl, I'd rather be single than with people who are just passing it around and passing it around
and
passing it around.
And that's the common misconception of polyamory.
Yeah. She said it's a common misconception, but she didn't say that she ain't trying to pass it around, girl.
I sure the hell am not, girl. You have... No, not this one.
Yeah, I'm not even. I'm not trying to get in some, like, I don't want my boyfriend to have a boyfriend who has a boyfriend who has a husband who has a... No, girl.
That is not how it works.
Stop
either.
The insanity,
a
bitch.
Mess.
It, like, I have friends who are in a polyamorous relationship, and there are so many fucking people in the relationship that I would need a legitimate flow chart to figure it the fuck out. It's like that time we tried to sit down and figure out the relationships of all the Kardashians.
Yeah.
Girl, you need a flow chart. It's like, this one and this one are married, and then underneath that, like, the one person has, like, boys and slaves and boyfriends, right,
that's,
and
that's a whole nother.
I do not judge these relationships.
Girl, because, did you just hear all that shit she was talking, and then the next thing she's gonna say is, "I do not judge." Girl, kiss my ass.
No, I don't judge them. If it works for somebody else, that's fine. I have no interest in it. There's like, because I have numerous friends. My one of my really, really good friends, Jesse Van Seal, is like within the leather community here in San Francisco. He's a former Mr. San Francisco Leather 2012. All this stuff. He has his like this leather family that is together, and it's a polyamorous situation. I love all the boys in it. It works great for them. Mm-hmm. I have no personal interest in it. Like, there's a huge difference.
But girl, no one's saying you have a personal interest in it.
Right. But that's my point. Like,
point is you don't have a personal interest
I don't understand it because I don't particularly have a personal investment in it. It's not my place to have to understand it. Like, I would like a better understanding of what it is to be polyamorous, and I'm sure that when Nick and Nebraska and Derek come on, they're going to give us, like, their idea of what it's like to be in a polyamorous relationship, and you can certainly chime in because you have personal experience in that, but I know for me that is not of interest. I do not want that for myself, so I would rather be single. Like, I'm okay with being single rather than being in a situation, in this particular discussion, being polyamory that does not comply with what I want for myself.
Yeah, but girl, no one's saying you have to choose between the two.
Right. I'm not saying that anybody is. I'm just saying that I don't understand it because it's something that I don't personally, like, invest any time or interest in because it doesn't affect me. When I see it working for other people, like I said, these are, like, very, very close friends of mine who have this, like, situation that is so convoluted to me that I would legit need a flowchart. I just don't even try.
She's a confused music. I think she's lost. Anyway.
Exactly. I will. Perhaps I will.
Please.
Do it. All right, you guys. We are about 20-some minutes into this episode of Party Foul Radio, and we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back,
we have a jam-packed show for you.
We sure do. We're not only going to have Nebraska Thunderfuck, Derek Barry, and their partner Nick, who I cannot remember for the life of me his last name, which I feel bad. We're going to have that information when we come back, because he's highly accomplished in his own right. He's a photographer, and he's, like, all of these things. And
we'll have them on.
Yes, we're going to have the three of them on. Plus, we are going to have Venus Delight on, talking about her new play, Madonna Dearest, which is going to be coming to San Francisco this week.
Come on, Venus Delight.
Plus, we're going to catch up on her. And depending on how long all those queens run, we still may be able to squeeze in Susan Surftown this week. If not, she will be on next episode, so we will have that. Anyway, it's going to be absolutely packed 2 hours here at Party Foul Radio. I'm Poi Lamar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
We'll be back right after this.
Oh, she really came that way? All right. My name is Alyssa Edwards.
All right.
I need to
get up in this gig, girl.
My name is Alyssa Edwards, and this is Party Foul Radio.
I don't get cute. I get drop-dead gorgeous.
All right, you guys. You are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poi Lamar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
So do you remember all those years ago when Madonna, Christina Aguilera, and Britney Spears had that, like, on-stage three-way kiss?
Oh, my God, girl. You would.
Girl, well, let me tell you. What you are about to experience is, like, the wildest drag race-infused orgy of a lifetime.
However, I don't think any of these guests are as old as Madonna.
Well, I am, as you finally asserted. So, we are super excited for our first, I guess this is like Menage a Five. Menage a Five.
Girl,
whatever. Anyway, we've got with us. We've got Nick San Pedro, Nebraska Thunderfuck, and Miss Derek Barry on the line with us. How are you guys doing?
All right.
Hi, how are you? We're doing so fabulous here in Vegas.
That's Derek, right?
This is Derek, yes.
Yes, okay. Trying to let our listeners listen to everybody's voices. We recognize your twang there, girl.
Oh, my country twang, even though I'm from Northern California.
Oh, my God.
So I think
I'm so excited to be here on Party
Foul
Radio.
Oh, yes, come through.
Oh, come on, free plug, hey.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I love the fact that you guys, we've gotten a real sense through following your social media that you sort of, like, really do kind of do everything together as a collective.
Yeah, I think that's what's been important about this relationship, and we're also lucky to be creative artists where we have the freedom to join each other on gigs or travel together, take vacations together, and not work that typical 9-to-5 that doesn't allow us to go places with each other.
Well, I think that's really great, and I know that the three of you really do a lot of really collaborative work. So can you explain, like, how the collective, like, what each of you bring to the table creatively?
Well, when I first met Nick, I knew about his artwork, but I had no idea that he does so much more. And he really helped me kind of cultivate my brand and put my website together. He got my YouTube started. He did my graphic design and just everything that I needed to put my name out there. And working in a Vegas show was great, but that's not going to make you global. And I'm so lucky that he had a good background in so many different types of art, whether it was graphic design, painting, he has done body painting. And so he really was the one that kind of helped me put myself out there, because he had done it all for himself throughout his career. And now he's done the same for Mac with drag. And I think that we've just been so blessed to be in the scene. And he's always been more behind the scenes, unless he's doing live painting or things like that for gigs. But he's the shy one. So he gets to create all this for us, and we get to go on stage and perform it. So it really was the perfect marriage all around.
Yeah,
and Derek has, to piggyback off of that, Derek has also helped me by setting me up with my agent.
Oh, he's piggybacking my kid.
And performing, we get to perform together, and I've helped him with setting him up here in Vegas with different fashion photographers, stylists. So everything that we do ends up being interdependently.
Well, how did you guys meet romantically?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, Nick and I met at Pamela Anderson's fashion show, and that was a show that she had done with Heatherette. It was at Rain Nightclub at the Palms.
2005? Yeah, that was 2005, which is BM, before McKinsey.
Oh, Lord. And the funny thing about that party was we had these VIP laminates. And we were like, oh, we are VIP to Pamela Anderson's fashion show. And I was with Chanel and my friend Alexia and the Diana Ross impersonator, Crystal Woods. And we all walked up to this party, and the line is all the way out the door of the nightclub, down the hall, through the casino, and all these people have these VIP laminates. And I was like, oh, God, no, I'm not waiting in the line that's freaking here. This is embarrassing. So Nick was there, and they all knew Nick from being in Vegas and going out and things like that. And so he actually got us into the party. And I was like, oh, okay, so Nick San Pedro is someone fancy. I need to know who this is. So, yeah, that's the night we met. And then we were friends for about 2 years before we started actually hanging out. And then he moved in real fast because he's a wolf. And then we met Mac about 5 years later. And I always joke that Mac is our 5-year anniversary present for each other. We didn't know what to get each other, so we decided to get a joint present.
I love it. That's cute.
Well, I'm listening to your story about how you met, and I can say that you and I have one thing very much in common, Derek. Honey, celebrity and power and influence make my panties drop like it's hot too, bitch. I'm like, ooh.
I'm looking for the private jet. I'm looking for the VIP.
Oh, my God.
Yes, ma'am. You can get me to cut a line? Mm.
Oh, my God. So did you guys know you were open to polyamory before you met your third partner?
No, we actually met Mac through my ex. We were I had just flown back into town, and we went to hang out with my friend Justin, and Mac had been over there hanging out with him that night. And so both Nick and I saw Mac, and we're like, oh my God, like, he's 6'4", he is beautiful, and we had never met him before. He had just moved to Vegas. And so we were like, oh, fresh meat, let's get it, girl.
Yeah.
But he was very confident, and we had not even really discussed the idea of ever being in a relationship with a third person. And I think that what was so different about this is we started hanging out as friends, and then it quickly led from, okay, that was a fun hookup, to, oh, there's actually feelings developing, and there was never anything behind anyone's back. And I think that that's what made it so successful from the beginning, is because Max was attracted to both of us. We were both attracted to him, and it didn't feel like anyone was doing anything wrong. And so it just felt organic, and it happened so naturally within just a couple months, and we were hanging out every day.
Yeah, I agree with that. This was not something that I ever thought that I would be in, a truffle or a monogamous relationship, and I didn't even think that a situation like that could be successful. But life is full of surprises, and you just have to be along for the ride. And as long as you're staying true to yourself and not hurting anyone, then that's all that matters.
I love that. I had a conversation about polyamory this past weekend, and monogamy, and how monogamy is kind of like a social construct. What is your guys' take on monogamy being a social construct?
Well, I think that monogamy is good for people that want that. And I think that that creates a lot of successful relationships. But I also think that monogamy works as well. And I think that people that have open relationships, if that works for them, you know, then so be it. I think that we're all different people, and we all have different needs. And so we have to find what works for us.
Yeah, we were talking earlier, and I do not think that... First of all, I want to backtrack a little bit, because Pearl is talking about polyamory in a way that does not sound to me like it actually reflects what you guys have, because you use the word
polyamory. Poly is
monogamous. Trinogramous.
I think you've got up. It's not in the
trinogramous.
So what that means is that you guys are a trio, but are you closed? It's not like an open trio.
Yeah,
it is. Exactly, and that's a common misconception, is that people see that there's three of us in a relationship, and they say, I shouldn't generalize, but there are some that say, oh, well, that's not a real relationship, or they have an open relationship, or...
Right.
And that's just not the case. It's a normal relationship.
Well, I mean, you can't... It's not normal. There's no...
I agree with that.
That's being normal out there.
That's standard... you know, one-on-one relationship just with an extra person.
And we get the thing that we get the most is the most common is meeting a stranger or whatever, and they're like, oh, you guys looking for a fourth?
Oh my God, that's so annoying.
We get that all the time.
And I think sometimes it's just used as an icebreaker for people. I don't really think that many people are out there looking to join this, but it's interesting to me how many people will talk to us one-on-one and then kind of offer themselves. And I'm always surprised, because for 5 years almost, we've done a pretty good job to make it clear that we're in a relationship together. I guess not every post says, hi, this is our closed three-way relationship.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously we're not out there putting that on every picture we post, but I think that it's just, that's part of gay culture is to hook up with someone one night and then maybe someone else the next night. And I mean, I lived that lifestyle. I know Mac lived it, Nick lived it. And that's part of being single and growing up in clubs where you can do whatever you want. You have the freedom, and we've all lived in certain cities that we didn't really have to worry about that. You know, there were gay clubs, there were gay bars, and all of that. So it's still interesting to me, though, that people are so forward. And I guess because I've been out of the dating world for, you know, like now 10 years with Nick, that it just surprises me. I'll get people come up to me and they're like, oh, I just really want to, can I just kiss you? And it's like a straight guy. And I'm like, that's not really allowed.
No.
You know? So it's always kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, I think that, I'm not actually surprised that you guys would get plenty of offers, because they're not really trying to join you for, like, a lifetime. They're trying to join you, perhaps, for an evening.
Right.
And
yeah, they want
to
have, like, a guest star.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm the only guest star in this movie, honey.
Ah! My name's on the marquee, bitch. Get out.
That's right.
So, like, outside of just talk about your relationship, Nebraska, you are kind of a rarity in the drag world because of the fact that we sort of got to see you legitimately born on TV, pretty much. And then you've gone on to, like, a very successful career as a performer in your own right. And it's very backwards from, say, somebody like the experience of Derek, your partner, who did this art form for a number of years and then got to take it to the highest level.
Right.
Like, sort of as a prize. Like, now you've got been chosen. So what has the experience been like doing it sort of in that backwards sense?
Well, I'm very thankful for the opportunities that have come about because of that makeover on the show. But I have to be honest with you. Before I did that makeover on the show, I never had an interest in drag. I never tried on women's clothes. When I did the makeover on the show, that was truly the first time I ever walked in heels.
It was like watching Bambi, but live action.
Yeah.
So shady.
Obvious, you know, but I've never done that before. So, since for me, that was a little humiliating, but it opened me up to another world, and I'm so thankful for that. And we're all presented with opportunities throughout life, but it takes a very confident person to seize that opportunity when it's there. So I would like to think that I seized that opportunity and that I'm making the most of it and having fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of people would kind of envy the role of, you know, having somebody who ultimately went on to win All Stars,
right,
you know, be their first, like, makeover and, you know, mentor them for the very first time out of the gate. So, and then...
Yeah, I love Chad Michaels. I'm a huge fan of Chad.
Oh, snap.
No, we love Alaska. I'm so happy for her and her big win. And she keeps reaching for the stars and climbing higher and higher in her own accolades and fame. And the three of us are big fans of hers.
Yeah, we love Alaska.
Well, Derek, you joked about Chad, but when Chad was on the podcast, Chad raved about you. You know, like, it's clear there's a mutual admiration.
To me, out of 100 queens, there's no other Chad Michaels, and I think that since he was the first drag queen I ever met in my entire life, there is something that I will always have a special place for him. And I know it sounds so cliche, like, but that's really, when I think of drag, that's the highest pedestal of drag for me, because he not only does Cher, but he does other drag as well. And just looking at him, and when I was dressed as Whitney meeting him, and he was getting dressed as Cher to do his show, I looked at him as the epitome. Like, that's the god of drag. And his sheer illusion is so incredibly striking that all I wanted to do in this business was to be at that level where people look at me and say, wow, that's Steve Brittany. And just to have the confidence that he gave me from day one, where he is like, you naturally look like her. This is just, you have a natural gift. That's your talent, is that you look like Brittany. And he didn't even know who I was, but... just to kind of take a chance on me, and he got me set up with the Vegas show and has been there through each point of my career, whether it was America's Got Talent or Lacage, and then even to Drag Race.
He's even still a great mentor.
Yeah.
To you.
Yeah, I could call on him at any time and get advice or kind of pick his brain, and he's just the most cool, calm, and collected individual, and I'll always have the most respect for him because we do come from similar backgrounds where we are known for doing one thing, and there's so much more to chat than share, but I think that's amazing that he's the most well-known share. I mean, what a gift, you know?
Well, I recall many, years before there was a Drag Race at all, knowing of who Chad Michaels as Cher. You know, Chad Michaels
exactly.
is Cher. Like, that was the headline, Chad Michaels is
yeah.
Cher. And
yeah.
and so when I had the first opportunity to meet him, and it was backstage at Dreamgirls, and he was so remarkably kind and so
yeah.
gracious. And to me, that was, you know, I can only imagine that it was a similar thing with you. It's so striking. Here is this person who has reached the legit pinnacle of what he could aspire to do in his chosen profession, and who's still so open to, offering suggestions or advice or...
Yep. And so down to earth, and I've never heard him speak one bad word about anyone, which is not easy in this business because
right.
there are a lot of people that will backstab you and underbid you for gigs and try to steal your job, and, you know,
yeah.
if the list goes on, it's a really tough business, show business. It's really
yeah.
hard.
Yeah.
But in addition to being show business, there's gay drag queens, which is the most cutthroat, I think, in the business. And for him to have lived through his West Hollywood shows and other shows in Southern California, whether he was running them or hosting them or starring in them or whatever, and to still be that grounded and that sweet to anyone is a really test of his own character. And that's why I just think he's it for me.
Oh, God.
Well, another parallel I would draw between, the three of you and Chad is the fact that his husband, Adam, is so friggin' supportive and so integral
yeah.
in his success. You know what I mean? Like, I think that
oh, yeah.
it's like the dream relationship for any drag queen. Like, the husband who wants to, see you succeed like that.
Yeah, and Adam is so creative.
Oh, my God, yes.
The things that they've done together, costumes that they've created together, I mean, they could sell them to Cher. Or they could hold one up of Cher's and one up of one of Adam's and Chad's creations, and I don't even think she'd be able to know the difference. And that's what I love about the celebrity impersonator side of him, is the attention to detail is so impeccable, and so I love that. That's why I started doing drag, was to impersonate Britney Spears. So they really are just the perfect team, and they always make sure they go above and beyond.
So you, of course, being a Britney impersonator, stick very close to that. But after the show, have you felt a real personal push, from inside, to expand beyond being just Britney, if that makes any sense?
There was. I had that when I first was auditioning for the show. That you have to put 14 looks together, and obviously they can't be 14 Britney looks, because that's not what they want to see. So that was fun to put different looks together and kind of create different characters. And I did have a lot of fun with that. And when I started getting booked out, when the show was on and the announcement had been made, every single show that I did was booking me as Britney Spears.
Of course.
And I wasn't expecting that. I thought there were definitely going to be clubs that's like, Dear Fairy from RuPaul's Drag Race, and then use, some drag photo, but everything was as Britney, and I was like, you know what, that's a gift, because now I get to go into markets that I hadn't gone before, or get to return to places, and I still get to do what I love. It's definitely what I'm built for, and then I can explore my own drag, whether it be photo shoots, or if I want to add another set into my set list, then I can you know, do whatever I want, whether it's my own song or a cover or another pop song. So I've been having more fun experimenting on my own and kind of figuring out what I really want to do, because now I don't have a limitation on myself, and I think that that is the true gift that Drag Race brought me, is the ability to try new things, because I did stick myself in that freaking category for so long. But what people don't understand is there wasn't anything else I needed to do.
Of course.
Every show I was looked at was at Britney, so why would I, if it's not broke, don't fix it type thing. And so many Drag Race fans have this kind of, I don't know, this feeling that if you don't do your own drag, then you're not doing drag. And that's not really the case. Celebrity impersonation is such a big part of drag. And if it wasn't, then there wouldn't be shows like Divas on the Strip for 30-plus years.
Exactly. His dick is still tucked. He's still wearing a wig. It's drag.
Right.
Well, you know, again, that's something that always has sort of confounded me. And when I watched the season and, you know, you were getting so harshly critiqued, and people were like saying, well, you should be able to do this, or you should be able to do that. And my question every single time was, but why would you do that if you don't need to do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's no different than, like, why would you cover your eyebrows if you don't need to? Or, you know,
exactly.
Whatever it is, if there's something that does not pertain to your drag, then no, you don't have to learn how to do that.
Right, I don't do my
eyebrows.
I don't.
So, I mean, it's one of those things that I never quite understood that critique, because, honey, like, you had a better career than any of those girls going into your season. So,
exactly.
You know, and what I said in that interview a long time ago when Pearl and I did the one with Chad is that every other girl on your season honestly went on there looking to become a star.
Right.
You went on there as a star, and if things didn't pan out for you the way you wanted, you can go right back to your amazing job, like working in Vegas as a headlining act. You didn't need it to the same way the girls did.
Yeah, I found it interesting that people critique me so harshly about the crowd and such, because drag is not about lofty brows, it's about lofting your talk, first of all. And second of all, there's so many different types of drag. There's drag queens with beards now, you know, and nobody's saying that that's not drag. That is drag. It's a form of drag. And if Derek is a celebrity impersonator and he doesn't want to block his brows because he thinks that it looks more like Britney, who he's
Yeah, I mean, I remember, so you did like that photo shoot with my drag dad, Jose Guzman, and he actually seemed to really want to push you outside of the Britney zone.
Yeah.
In the photos.
And I love that. And Jose is the one that really has pushed me so much for photo shoots. And that's why I love working with him, because every time I shoot with him, I want to look different. I have this need or this desire to have that be documented and show people. Just because I didn't do it perfectly on Drag Race doesn't mean I wasn't willing to perfect it. And that's what I get to do now. And every time I see Jose, I have a different face. And he is so great to work with, because the way that he makes the person feel that he's shooting, at least when I work with him, he makes me feel like I'm sexy. No matter what look I'm going for, he makes me feel like a confident model being shot. And I think that that's what a great photographer does to get a great shot.
Yeah, he's extremely motivating, and he has a unique artistic paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what inspires us when we're with him. He pushes us out of our boundaries and out of our comfort zone.
Yeah.
As a great photographer.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, I saw some of the photos that you guys did with him when he was in Vegas. And, of course, like, I am so lucky, because when I want, you know, like, when you want to have a look that is other than what you consider your classic or traditional or iconic sort of look, he's the ideal person to push that. I love the work that he did with you guys when he was in Vegas.
Thank you.
thing.
Well, and you've done something so similar with your own aesthetic, because I know for so long you had your signature look, and you
that high ass eyebrow, girl. That high ass eyebrow, I can't.
But look at what you done now to challenge yourself and to get out of that. And how great does it feel when someone doesn't recognize you? I mean, I think that's what a cool transformation, you know?
Yeah, and that's the great thing I think about drag is because, and it speaks to sort of like what your experience was as well as mine. I think that. For a long time, if you've done drag for any period of time, you get very comfortable in what you feel is personal to you. Like, this is how I look. And then it takes somebody like Nick or like Jose or somebody, you know, like in my case, the biggest influence to my drag was Lanesha Sparks to come along and say, you know, have you tried this? Like, why don't you try this? Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be the way you think. And it's still you because no matter what the makeup is, it's you. Like, the personality.
Yeah.
Whether my eyebrows are in my hairline or not. Shut up, girl.
Girl.
So. Okay, so I only got to work with Brittany, like, for, like, one hot second in, like, from 20 feet away. You've actually had the opportunity to interact with her, right?
Yeah, a couple times. The first time was on the Tonight Show when I first dressed up like her. For Halloween 2003, she was on the Tonight Show a couple weeks later, and we slept outside and got tickets for the front row, and I'll never forget the interaction I had with her, because she looked out in the audience and locked eyes with me, and her mouth dropped, and she said, oh my God, and just stared at me with her mouth open, with her hands covering her mouth, and that's what someone dreams of, is to have the interaction with the star that they're impersonating. And I had just started, but I didn't just start being a Britney fan that month, you know? I had been a fan since 1998, 99. And so to 5 years later, lock eyes with her and have that moment be about her looking at me instead of me looking at her as a fan was a dream come true. And I'll never ever forget that. There's been several events that since that I've been either front row or front row of the concert, or for GMA welcoming event in Vegas, I was right behind the red carpet out in the desert, dressed as her, and she signed a poster for me in Vegas for her Planet Hollywood welcoming event. So there's been a lot of interaction that I've had with her, and I feel so lucky because she's here. You know, and the goal is to ultimately work with her, whether it be on stage or music video or anything like that. So that's the ultimate, that's the goal that I'm pushing for. But all these little kind of nuggets along the way have really kept me driven and let me know that it's okay that I chose this path, and I have more interaction with her than any other impersonator, and that speaks volumes, you know?
Yeah, I think I was, a whole group of us here in San Francisco had done this event where we announced her, like, when she was going to be on Good Morning America, when she was debuting.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I was there for that. I remember that.
And it was so weird. We were not allowed to actually interact with her, but, like in person, because whatever. But we were in the audience, and we took a photo with this guy who I didn't at first recognize, but he seemed really familiar to me. And then, like, all of a sudden, I started getting all of these tweets being like, oh, my God, Britney Spears just tweeted a picture of you and her dad. It was, like, Heclina, me,
oh
and
goodness.
Her dad. And it was, like, you know, of course, all these people who follow me, follow her, and they recognize it. I was, like, okay, that's a little weird, but, so.
Yeah. Oh, that's so fun.
So.
Yo, her parents are so supportive. I love that they're always at the shows. I met her mom backstage at. I think it was the Orlando show, and I was dressed in the circus outfit for the circus tour, and Lynn was just walking down the hall, and I was like, hi, Lynn, and she turned and, like, did a double take, and then she's like, hi, and I think it kind of just surprised her that it looked like you know, Brittany walking down the hallway with a group of people doing the tour in a circus jacket. So little things like that are so fun, you know, because if you can even get attention from their parents or their siblings. I know I've worked with quite a few of her dancers, and even they're, like, shocked at the resemblance when I'm in drag. So they work so closely with her. They see her nightly. And that's pretty amazing to know that there's really something that even the people that work so closely with her can see as well.
So as soon as Brittany drops a new video, do you, like, race out to have a costume made? I mean, like,
right.
Is your slumber party costume in the works right now or whatever?
Yeah, there's a few slumber party costumes that I really love. I love the Blue Tool one. I love anytime she does something different. And the Black Feather outfit is really cool. So there's a lot of outfits from that look that I love. In the Vegas show, she throws on a little robe over her lingerie. So I've been doing that one in my shows just because it feels the most like a slumber party, and I like that it's sexy and intimate, and it just kind of is a different look for the set. So I think the fastest I ever had anything made was her VMA performance outfit. We watched it on a Sunday night this year, and the next day we called Coco Vega and set it up with her. We met with her Tuesday, Wednesday. She made it. Nick put some painted embellishments on it, and I wore it that Saturday. And that was the fastest I think we ever put something together for one of her looks.
Wow.
I like doing stuff like that because nobody expects that, you know? And then they see it right away, and they're like, whoa, she literally wore that less than a week ago, and this is your first gig since then, and you already have it. So that stuff's fun as an impersonator.
It reminded me of when, like, I think it was, I don't know, a couple Super Bowls ago or whatever, Beyonce performed at the Super Bowl, and it's literally as soon as she rose up through the stage, I screen capped it, and I said, tomorrow there's going to be 5,000 drag queens with this outfit.
Right.
You
know, like,
oh, yeah.
Mass they production.
All have that made. The leather one with the lace. And
right. Exactly. Which,
I love that outfit.
Which turned out to basically be a nice knockoff of an old Tina Turner costume, which is almost exactly
what
it
is. Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I thought... So, yeah. So, how often in Nebraska do you guys travel together and get to perform together?
Actually, we get to travel together quite often, which is a lot of fun. Because, for me, the reason why I pursued this was so that I could go on the road with Nick and Derek. I didn't want to be left behind, and I was trying to figure out how I could be an asset to what they were doing, so I could come with. And at first I wanted to just do his merchandise, Derek's merchandise. And he told me no, because I'm horrible with numbers. And so Derek actually suggested that I perform at Nebraska. And I took some time to think about it, and I said, you know what, I'm going to do it. And the next thing I did was text Alaska and see if that's something she'd be comfortable with, and she was very supportive, and, you know, now here we are.
Who is that?
who the hell has my private number?
Right.
I have a new phone, who is that?
Right.
Oh, God.
Is it Fifi?
Oh, I love it. So shady.
Oh, Lord, Eric always got the jokes.
Oh, my Lord. So, if they asked you, Derek, to go back for an All-Stars, given the way that, like, you know, the judges critique you on your season, would you do it?
Yeah, definitely, because I'm so much more comfortable with what I like about my drag now and what I don't. And I learned a very valuable lesson. You can't let people get into your head and tell you what you have to do, what you should do, what you need to do. I was tasked to portray my drag, and as soon as I got away from doing what I do, that's when I got let go. And I think that even though there's things that I could have done differently or better along the way, so that that wouldn't have been, like, the final straw. There's so much more now that I'm comfortable doing that I think would be a great asset on All Stars. And the evolution of my drag already, I think, has, it is so different from what I did on the show. And I would love for people to see that side of it instead of just a photo that I'm posting or an appearance or whatever. But my biggest mistake was letting the cast and the judges tell me what I need to do drag. I just needed to elevate what I was already doing. I didn't need to, you know, start over from scratch.
Right.
And paint a new face. I just needed to heighten what I was already doing, and that's what I do now.
And let's be real. We want Derek on there because he makes great fucking TV.
I do. I got no skill, honey.
Zero skill.
Well, I mean, of course, I think that there's... I was surprised, honestly, that by watching this season of All Stars, that there wasn't... It was dramatic, but I thought there would be more drama. But I think that what sort of put a damper on the drama element was that the girls all know each other really well now, so they go a little lighter on each other than they do a group of strangers, which is so fucked up to me because I'm the exact opposite. I'll be nice to strangers, but I'm like, go hard on my friends because I know that we have a relationship that exists otherwise.
Yeah. Well, and I think the hardest thing about All Stars is they've already lived that backlash from the fans and social media. So there were so many girls there, like someone like Roxy or like Cece, that had to kind of tone anything down because they didn't want to get that type of...
Or by their song.
Yeah, they didn't want that reputation again. But the problem with holding back is that you're not really being your true self, and that's what they're casting. And even though it's a reality show, it's still a TV show. There's still entertainment that has to be done, or it's not going to be fun to watch. So I know during my season, if I didn't like the way someone looked at me, I had no problem telling them how I felt about that look. But there's a lot of girls that won't do that. They're like, no, I don't want to be portrayed that way. And it's like, well, bitch, do you want to just get walked all over? And then who are you? The one that offered no entertainment value at all.
Yeah, you know, Tiffany Fuller, New York, is a great example of...
Bro, that's a little extra, though.
...authentically her on TV, regardless of the backlash or what have it, and it launched her into reality superstardom.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone should take notes from her.
Yeah.
Wait, is that New York?
Yeah, that's New York. That's a little extra, you guys. But I don't know about...
But I do agree with part of what you're saying because,
yeah.
Like, the way I look at it is even more extreme because, okay, so you're Fifi or you're Roxy and you're on there and you know that you've got the fans are going to come for you if you open your mouth. Well, it's already been proven that the fans are going to come for you
no matter what.
Like, exactly. You can be on there.
Whether you do good, whether you do bad, there were times where I won a challenge. And I still got a worse backlash. Like, how could you win? That dress was ugly. Your makeup sucks. I mean, so many things. And it's like, they can't even appreciate when you do win.
Right.
So, there's no winning. You just have to do you. And I think that's the number one thing when you audition for that show, is be you. Because that's what we're casting. And I think a hard thing for me was that I didn't want to paint away from my face because I have been painting that same face for 10 plus years. And I didn't know how to paint myself different from my Britney drag and still keep that sexiness that I feel I have. And now playing with makeup in the mirror, I've had to figure out what I want to do to my face to still make sure that I feel sexy and that I feel pretty, but I look different. And I think a lot of girls, they've already experimented that. Their drag, they found years ago along the way, and they were searching for something else in me, and I just hadn't found it yet.
Okay, I'm so very glad you said that, because I was actually, that was something I was going to bring up, is because we, of course, have talked about you and what our experience was watching you and all this stuff on the podcast in the past, and I never for people who might listen to be like, but you said blah, blah, blah. And one of the things I said about you repeatedly is they kept saying to you, who is Derek? Who is Derek? And my, it was both a defense and essentially considered a criticism of, was that, well, I said, I don't think that Derek Berry knows who Derek Berry is, aside from Derek Berry is Britney Spears, because that's what his career has been. So unlike all of us who actually have formed Pollo Del Mar and Pearl Tees, our drag characters that we've created,
right,
you created, yeah, Britney Spears. So like, who you would be without that is something that you hadn't yet even had the opportunity to explore, because you, right, didn't have to, because you were getting a nice paycheck to be Britney.
Yeah, and that's something I remember specifically talking to Naomi about on the show. I don't know if it aired, but she was very upset that I was there because she didn't like my drag or didn't think it was drag or whatever a 21-year-old says. And
boom.
Why is it a bad thing to come on Drag Race and find out what I want my drag to be? This is how you push yourself. This is how you get outside of the box. You don't think it's hard for me to go on national television and experiment? That was extremely hard. But if I didn't do that, I would still be working 6 nights a week in Vegas doing the exact same thing I've done for years, and I was tired of doing it. So if Drag Race was casting me and giving me the option or the opportunity to experiment with something like that, I'm going to take it. I don't care what a viewer is going to say, or I don't care what someone that's not a fan of mine is going to say. I was inspired to do it, to find my own journey, and I found it. I found what I like and what I don't like, and what I'm willing to do and what I'm not willing to do, you know?
Right. Right, you know, and I honestly, like, not to be redundant about Jose, but there are times when I work with him that I feel the same way, because he's like, I know who you think you are, but let's like find a different part of you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if we don't,
yeah,
have people, whether it's in drag or in life, like if we don't have somebody who challenges us to think of ourselves,
yeah,
outside of the little hula hoop that we create for ourselves, you can be very repetitive in life, and life can get real, real boring real, real fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and as artists, that's not a way to live. Specifically as artists, that's not a way to live.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree.
So, well, how should everybody follow you guys on social media? I know for you, Miss Berry, it's just at Derek Berry.
Yep, mine's super easy. I'm on Instagram and Facebook as Nebraska Thunderclub, and then I am on Twitter as Mackenzie Claus. And I have NickSanPedro.com and everything at NickSanPedro.
At Nick San Pedro. Oh, you guys, this is such a delight. I've like, we,
oh, wonderful.
I've really wanted, ever since I saw you guys, not you, Nebraska, because you couldn't join us, but ever since I saw Nick and Derek, you guys at lunch that time, like, I wanted to have you on, so I'm so super stoked that we got you.
Yeah, that was so much fun. And you, I mean, I met you years ago when we worked together for the Great America event.
Yes, I remember.
You were just so sweet and
live.
And then getting to, well, I didn't know you that well yet. but then getting to have lunch with you, and what I love about meeting someone outside of drag is you literally get to know them.
Right.
Because we're all in character when we're in drag. Whether it's a little heightened personality of our own, or it's a complete character creation, we're all different. And it's just so nice to talk to someone that has lived through the business, that knows what they're doing, that's professional, that has dreams come true. And when I got to have lunch with you that day, it was so nice to hear your story of how you're still wanting to challenge yourself and how it's not easy and how there are no limitations but the limitations that we put on ourselves. And
truly,
the best advice I ever got was someone from America's Got Talent. Her name was Christine, and she was Mariah Carey's tour manager. And I'm so thankful for everything and all the opportunities and situations I've had come my way in life. And she one day said, you need to stop thanking us and start thanking yourself.
because you showed up, and the rest just happened. But show up in life. And that's one thing that I'll never forget, because you won't know what can come your way if you don't try. And if you don't audition, you can't get the part. And if you don't go to the interview, you're not going to get the job. Like, it really, it sets up every situation in life to just show up, whether it's putting yourself out there with a phone call, an email, a text, whatever it is. And that's something that I still want to do more of. And I'm so excited to see what else the future holds, you know, of beyond Vegas and Drag Race and TVs and movies and all that other stuff. I'm excited that there's so much more out there than I've ever thought about.
Yeah, well, the classic saying is, if they say no 99 times, that 100th time when they say yes is the only one that will matter.
Right.
You know, and like,
the 100th queen, honey.
Yeah, girl. All right.
Well, we thank you guys super duper much for so joining amazing. Us. Yeah, we really had a great time.
Thank you. Such a pleasure. Thank you, Corio. Thank you, Pearl.
Yeah, thank you, Pearl. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
All right, you guys take care. And we'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, that was a cute little kiki with them.
All right, girl.
That was Derek Berry, Nebraska Thunderfuck, and Nick San Pedro. You can find probably all the details you need just by going to nicksanpedro.com.
Right, there probably, you go. Has
that's
them
like
all.
A, yeah, it probably has all of it. But that was really delightful. And did talking to them change the way you felt about Derek? Because I knew that you were sort of like, about Derek.
I never not liked Derek.
Oh, I just thought you were like, I didn't say you didn't like Derek, but I thought you were sort of like,
No.
You know, like sometimes you watch the show and you're like, this girl's meh.
No, I've actually always wanted to kind of see her perform. Because I've seen Derek like way back from when she first auditioned for America's Got Talent. That's how I knew her.
Wow. So that's a long time ago. And as Derek mentioned, like Derek and I worked together.
Well, I mean, I've never worked with her. That's why I said I've always just wanted to see her perform because I've never gotten a chance to see her live.
Well, we worked together years ago, like when I was producing Great America, which is now like 5-6 years ago. So it was before Drag Race, but after she'd already got a lot of exposure.
Right.
And so, and she was, it was a hit. The kids lived for her, girl.
Right.
So she came in and she slayed.
She's a super fan, yeah.
All right, you guys, we are going to take this quick break and we will be back with more Party Call Radio right after this.
Hey, this is Delta Work, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl, brought to you by Left Magazine.
Girl, you better work.
All right, you guys, this is an episode of Fabulous Celebrity Impersonators, now that I think about
it.
We had Derek Berry from RuPaul's Drag Race on, and our next guest is known the world over for her likeness to superstar Madonna. She will be coming to San Francisco on Thursday, January 12th, to San Francisco's Oasis Nightclub, where she'll be doing her Madonna Dearest play. It's an original play based, it's a marriage of Madonna and Mommy Dearest, in case you didn't get it.
Well, girl, let her talk about it.
Well, okay, fine. Let's call her. You guys, we're going to be calling Venus Delight right now. Oh, girl. I know. Constant mishaps on this fucking show. Let's call.
Calling Venus Delight. Come in, Venus Delight.
That kind of reminds me of my Cash Gordon number from the weekend. Lady Gaga's Venus. Okay.
Hello, Venus with Costa. How can I help you?
Oh, no! Oh, my gosh, girl. How are you, Venus?
I'm good, darling. How are you?
I'm great. It's just me and my girl Pearl T's here.
Hey,
what's up? Party in the house tonight.
You know.
So, we're really excited to talk to you. You know, of course, you and I go back a long way, but I'm really excited to have the opportunity to see you this week when you come to San Francisco to do your new play. So tell us about the start and, like, how you came about Madonna Dearest.
Okay, well, the play is written by my manager, Tony Brown, and Rafi Fabio, who's my boyfriend. And me and my manager did a play about 6 years ago in 2010 in Hollywood. And it was called Madonna's Christmas Carol, and it was a parody of a Christmas Carol, but it had Madonna as Ebenezer Scrooge, it had Cher as the Ghost of Christmas Past, Britney Spears as the Ghost of Christmas Present, Lady Gaga as the Ghost of Christmas Future, and we ran the fixed nights. We had six sold out shows, and then I got on Drag Race, so I've been touring since then, and we always talked about having a follow up play, and our thought for our follow up play was a play called Madonna Dearest, which was going to be a parody of Mommy Dearest, but with Madonna as Joan Crawford. And we had it on the back burner for so long, but right now, because of everything that's going on with Madonna, with Brock Carson and moving to the city and him moving out and, you know, Lola moving out and everything, I thought it was like the right time to actually do this play. So me and Master got together and we wrote this play, and I'm so excited about it. We're having another rehearsal right now tonight, and we leave the Frisco tomorrow, but I gotta say, it's freaking hilarious. It's like, it's so, for all the Mommy Dearest fans out there, it's going to have all the great scenes, you know, incorporated in it, but in a Madonna-style version. It's going to have, like, past drag moments from my career, from, you know, other television spots from my career, and it's, we're going balls out on this. I can't tell you how excited I am about it.
Well, as a person who has dedicated most of her career to impersonating Madonna, does it make you a little nervous to, like, lampoon somebody who you clearly are, you know, you idolize?
You know what? I totally have felt that way for many years, you know, because I've always had so much respect for her art, and, you know, I've been asked to, like, make fun of her for a very long time, and I just always refused it because I just didn't want to, you know, present her art in a disrespectful way or make fun of her. But I think now, you know, because I kind of made a name for myself, and people kind of looked to me as, like, you know, the Madonna queen. I just felt like, well, you know what I mean? Why don't you try something different, you know? And all love and fairness, everybody in my team, Madonna, would know that, hey, you know, I respect your art, and I want to present her in a very respectful way. But, hey, now it's time to have some fun, you know? I mean, the best humor, the best fun is to make fun of yourself, so why not, you know? And plus, also the play, I'm actually making fun of myself for the play Venus Delight, so, you know, it's not just making fun of Madonna, it's making fun of me as well.
Well, yeah, and I think that, in fairness to the subject matter, that there is a point in the not-so-distant past where Madonna crossed the line into a little bit of a parody of herself almost, even, I think.
Girl.
So, yeah, I mean, she somewhere along the line, she almost jumped the shark, I think.
Okay, which moment were you talking about in the recent past?
Yeah, I know. There's been...
There's been many moments, so which one are you thinking about?
Well, I mean, I was... There really are so many, but, like, even as recently as her carpool karaoke, where she made a point to get into the car and show, like, her ginormously pumped ass now, I was like,
oh my god,
it was like, okay, Madonna.
Oh my god, that was hilarious. I gagged over, and you know what, I think also right now, I've been seeing Madonna a lot more lately, kind of being a little bit more humorous lately, kind of making fun of herself, you know, a little bit more, not kind of showing a more human side of herself, more heart as well. I've always used to being Madonna being such a perfectionist and, you know, holding her emotions inside, but now lately I've been noticing she's having a lot more fun lately.
Yeah, like her twerking with Ariana Grande.
Oh my god.
But yeah, I mean, I have to give it to Madonna. She's a way better dancer than Ariana Grande.
Well,
I mean,
Ariana Grande looked like she had two left feet during that though.
Yeah,
Ariana's not a dancer, but Madonna's twerking. I was like, just stop. Yeah, just make it.
Yeah,
stop.
Please.
But, you know, I actually, when I'm sitting here, it didn't occur to me before, but while we're sitting here talking about it, I start thinking about, like, the kind of parallels that one could draw between Joan Crawford and Madonna, both of them, like, massive, like, the superstar of their generation and their respective art forms, and very controlling of the kind of image that they presented. And then, you know, as time progressed, like, that image started to break down a little bit. And I think that Madonna's roughly reaching the point where, like, you know, if it wasn't you making this play, then it could have been Rocco and Lourdes. Like, by the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. And, I totally agree with that. Right now, Madonna's, you know, at a point where it's like, has she really done everything? Is there anything else she can do? But, you know, I mean, what's next? But, I mean, there's, you know, with me, like, I still want to, you know, keep her art alive, keep her name alive, keep her legacy alive. And, I mean, anything, you know, it involves, like, doing, you know, something original, like, this play, you know, hey, why not, let's do it, let's have some fun, you know, it's all good fun.
How did Madonna start with you, anyway?
Yeah, you're obsessed with her.
I grew up with her in the 80s, but it wasn't until I was 15 years old, I was going through my mom's CD collection, and I found the first Madonna album on CD, and in the 80s, the song I remember the most was Dress You Up, and I thought that song would probably be on the album. So I went and played it, hoping I would hear that song, and it wasn't on that album, but I just listened to the full album, and I just, like, fell in love. I became entranced. I became obsessed, and I would be walking to school and, you know, being at school, waiting to come back home to listen to that album. I just didn't get enough, and I started, you know, really, like, looking her up and researching her and watching as much stuff as I could, you know, on VH1 and MTV at the time, and I loved what I loved about most of Madonna was, like, her underground sense of style, and she always started trends, and I always admired that about her, and then plus I admired that she was always so ballsy and just and so strong, and I always admired strong women. That was one thing I maybe like, truly admired, strong women. And as they're pretty, that's, you know, even a bigger admiration for me because I just admire strong, beautiful women.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's very gay. Like the strong.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I
can't get any gayer than that. Which also there's that parallel to her and Joan Crawford. You know, both are very strong women, perfectionists. You know,
absolutely.
On a constant battle to keep their careers going, you know, because Joan was, you know, continuing her career until she passed. Wait, hold on a second, play. Hold on.
Okay. We've lost you guys.
Just a little bit.
Oh my God, I think perhaps the windstorm has hit down in L.A.
No.
She might have been blown away from the phone.
We got crazy rain right now.
Us too, girl.
There we go. Hold on, I just had to step to a quieter part of the room. There we go. So is it raining over there?
Oh, yeah. My God. Terrible. Terrible storm, girl.
Yeah, it's raining over here. I don't know. I think we might have to have a rainy road trip tomorrow. We're all on me and my crew. Oh, hold on.
Oh, wow. All right.
I know, right?
Oh, my
God. The fire is not me.
Oh, my God. So, yeah. So, how many people are actually in the cast and crew of the show?
There is five, including me.
Oh, nice.
Okay, cool. So, the five of you are going
to... And then we just hired a cinematographer, videographer, to film the play and the experience, filming the play as well.
Oh, my God, it's going to be like your own Truth or Dare.
It seriously is. We plan to take this play on tour, so he's going to help us make a reel for it. And just, I mean, like, I'm so giddy about it because it's just, it's so delicious and yummy how it's coming out, and just... I'm so thrilled about it. You know, I think if Madonna saw it, she'd get a total kick out of it because it's fabulous. It's coming out so good. And in the play, there's that phobia from Mommy Dearest where Joan Crawford, you know, had about wire hangers. But in the play, Madonna discovers Lady Gaga records in Lola's closet, and she beats her up with the records in the play.
Oh my God.
And we have that. We have the cod bottle scene. We're going to be spreading, totally doing that scene and spreading all this comment all over the place. And we have the swimming pool scene with me and Rocco in the scene. I'm making fun of his bullshit earlier. Like about a year ago, Madonna made fun of Rocco's bullshit on Instagram. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, my God. She provides you so much
material.
Perfect
right.
Material for parody. And I think... Like, have you ever seen the many weeks ago, we had, like, months ago, actually, we had Julie Brown on, and we talked to her about Dare to be Truthful, Medusa, Dare to be Truthful, the spoof that she did, the parody she did of Truth or Dare.
Right.
In that situation, Madonna provided so much fodder for perfect parody. I can only imagine, like, what kind of fun you guys have had creating this.
Oh, my God, yeah, it's such a pity that it was being... editing and adding little tweaks in there for comedy, but it's a lot of comedy
Oh, girl, you're cutting in and out now. Damn you, weather.
Diesel.
Diesel.
Oh, you can hear me now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. Venus Delight doing a commercial for whatever. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Yeah.
Okay. So, but yeah, we got so much, we got a lot of ad-lib. This was actually a very challenging role for me because it's also playing Mommy Dearest as well. And like at the beginning of rehearsals, like, you know, we kind of, the way I was going about it, I didn't feel it was the right way. So I really had to, like, some scenes I'm playing a lot of rage. And I totally have more respect for Faye Dunaway just because to get into that very intense, rageful emotion is, you know, it's very hard. You know, and that psychoness and everything. But, you know, I wanted to bring that to the play because I think that's what makes Mommy Dearest so, you know, powerful and popular as well, is that, you know, over-the-top psycho acting as well. This was definitely a challenge for me as well.
In honesty, like, this is, like, almost a stroke of genius because you've got Madonna, who provides all this material for parody, and Mommy Dearest, which provides, like, a world of opportunity for parody, and... So, is San Francisco the debut of this play?
It is, yes. It's our first show.
Oh, my God. That's going to be so exciting.
And I'm so joyous also because our Thursday night is the full moon, and I always consider the full moon a good luck. So, I'm very excited about that. So it's going to be a very nice magical night.
You know, we asked you about your kind of, like, early obsession with Madonna. At what point did you decide to, like, start surgically enhancing yourself to reflect her?
Right.
Because that, to me, is like, really takes the ideology or whatever, the idolatry to a new level.
Right. Well, when I considered it, I was around a lot of impersonators and a lot of them were telling me about the surgical enhancements they had had and done. And, you know, things they've done to, you know, to help boost their look up, their careers and everything. I got inspired. So I took a look at my face and I went to a couple of doctors actually. And then there was one that was willing to work on me and he started working on me. And I was really happy with the results. And I totally noticed the whole change in the face. And I was noticing people were looking at me a lot more and I was getting tipped the house down a lot more, and I was, you know, I was being mistaken for Madonna at her concert, so it really just added, you know, and like, I really didn't think of it too much then, and then it wasn't until, like, the whole, like, media just got my story and just blew it up, and, you know, but, like, I just thought, okay, well, you know, it's just to help my art, but I guess in a sense it's a little neurotic and crazy in some eyes, so... Well, I'm a crazy person, so I own it.
But, I mean, and I think that there's people, certainly, who could understand if you got surgery for many other
reasons.
For a lot of other reasons. Like, say you had, like, a nose job. Or, I mean, you know, people get nose jobs all the time, or lip pumps, or whatever.
Right.
But to play the devil's advocate on the other side, have you ever, like, I don't know, like, I don't want to say regret, but, like, has the thought that you've traded some of your own personal individuality in for your art ever played on your mind? She hung up on me. She hated my question.
Did she hang up on you, or did she lose service because her phone was being ghetto?
It was being ghetto. We're going to try again. If she doesn't answer.
Yeah, yes, she hung up on you, though.
Girl, she's like, I'm over it.
She asked me about my surgery.
It ain't even ringing.
Hello?
Okay, now we're ringing. Now we're cooking.
Leave a message. I'm sure compose.
Oh.
Yeah, it only rang once, bro.
Okay,
It only rang once, so she has no service. We'll do that.
Either that or she really did hang up.
No,
oh, she's writing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Girl, didn't offend nobody, you guys.
Woo!
Well, I mean, I know I didn't.
Okay, she's like, call me back, girl. Venus and I have known each other for years. I was, like, the first one to book her in Northern California.
And she was not having it, girl.
Ah! Are you there?
Okay.
Oh my god, how about I was like asking a question and I was like, this is sensitive, and I was like, she hung up on me, I offended her.
No. I'm sorry, you know, technology these days can't trust it.
Truly. No, my question was, has the thought that you have traded some of your personal individuality by altering your face to more reflect Madonna, has that ever, like, been something you've, like, dwelled on mentally? You know what I mean? You've thought about it.
No, not at all. I have had a lot of work done, and I'm the kind of person that knows when to stop, you know. I mean, I've seen a lot of just plastic surgery botched jobs, and, you know, with just, you know, I didn't want to go that route. I didn't want to make myself with disforms. You know, I'm not an addict to plastic surgery whatsoever. So, you know, I wanted a couple of enhancements, you know, that can be seen with the makeup on, but also that wouldn't change, me being Adam, that, you know, that much. So, you know, I never wanted to go the route of just where it's going to be, like, too much, you know, to where it's, like...
Where you don't recognize yourself in the mirror.
Or, like, detox or something, you know.
Oh,
girl!
Oh! Hey.
Hi, Liam.
Well, I mean... Yeah, I mean, I think that Detox would probably say that she's got a little bit of an addiction to nip and tuck.
Definitely. She said she's had everything except for her knees, then.
Girl, that's a lot.
Yeah, she,
right.
Yeah, that she's had a lot, and I never wanted to do that. Would I keep getting touched? Just hell yeah. Would I get a foot implant? Why not? But, you know, I have a big love for my art, for Madonna, but also I have a big love for myself. You know, I don't want to.
You gotta work.
I want to look just as good as a boy as I do Madonna. Me individually.
Yeah, like sometimes I think to myself, like, okay, like, you know, people are like, oh, I got this done for drag, or I got this. And I'm like, honey, like, how often are you in drag? Like, you know, I'm in drag fairly often, but I wouldn't want to get things done that only look good when I've got makeup on. You know, like, after a while, you're like,
girl, what looks good with makeup on you? Girl.
Everything, bitch. Money. So, yeah, it's one of those things where I, like, sometimes I see people and I'm like, okay, it's like, in drag, you look like, I'm not even sure, like, I don't think a woman is even actually what you look like.
Oh.
And out of drag, I'm not sure that you look like a man or a woman either.
Right.
So. I don't know. Some people just look like freaking just pruned up, you know, just pruned up, sun-dried through plastic surgery.
Right.
You're just, I don't know. It's like, you know, do they have, like, friends or anybody telling them, like, well, you don't need to get that much nothing, you know? I mean, I don't think they have that, but, like, you know, I do listen to other people and say, like, hey, you know, do you think this looks good? Does it not? Should I have it in? Should I have it taken out? You know, I always, you know, I do listen to other people and have to say most of the time, but, you know, I do got it, you know, I'm pretty, control.
Meanwhile, I'm over here fucking straight dead because you said sun-dried fruit. She said sun-dried fruit. Oh, girl, dead.
The bubbly's kicking in. By the way, I have a big glass of champagne, so cheers, you guys.
Oh, cheers to you, too. Oh, my God. I'm for real, though.
Oh, my God. Paul, do you remember the first time that we're totally having drinks and just freaking, like, killing that Italian restaurant, you know, just rubbing it up over there.
You were having drinks. I was not. But
girl, you can tell the real tea.
Oh, girl, that's not true. I've only known her. You know that at this time. But she was having cocktails, and I just am along for the ride, girl. We have a good time. So I do. I absolutely do remember. It was in San Jose. It was you and Raja, Jose and I, and a couple other people, and we went to that Italian restaurant, that bougie-ass-looking Italian restaurant. But it was so fierce, you guys, because Venus was serving you Madonna realness. It was like taking Madonna to an Italian fancy restaurant, okay? Yes, ma'am. So,
Venus, how can people get tickets to the show?
Well, you can go on the SF Oasis website and buy your tickets there. You can go on the Facebook, their Facebook as well. They have listed in the calendar for the event. And to buy tickets. There's also links on my Facebook page as well on my Twitter.
awesome. And you know what? I want to, because I know you got to get back to rehearsal, and Pearl's got to kick it, like,
yesterday.
Yeah, she got to get out of here.
I got time. We can keep you, so.
Well, this is what I want to do. I want to have you back on because I know that you're getting ready to take this on tour, so next time, like, when you get the next city secured, we can have you back on and talk more at length about whatever and what cities you're going to be in.
Yeah, definitely. We're all planning that out right now. We really just wanted to get this premiered and really get an audience reaction. I can't wait to show it to you and see your reaction. It's just nonstop laughs from like beginning to end. And we even have a theme song at the beginning of the play that's just hilarious. My manager came up with it. It's too funny. Oh my gosh.
Well,
wow. This thing is going to be very controversial as well. There's still some parts in it that I can't say yet, but they are going to cause some controversy.
Very good. How long does the play run? Like, I mean, like run time. How long is the show itself?
It's a 2-hour play. They said that my show has to be a 2-hour show.
Oh, okay.
All right. And how long did you guys put it together?
Sounds like
we've been 2 months.
All right.
Oh my God! Good for you.
Right.
Wow.
2 months been working on it, and we even had one guy drop out. So. Last minute too, so we had to replace that. Actually, I had gotten really sick too. Here's a funny thing. The last time we did a play, I got really sick, and this time around comes and I got sick again. It was my nerves or something in me just kicked in. But yeah, I felt a lot better. But I was pretty ill. I couldn't even talk.
Oh, well. That'd be Pearl's dream if I got that whatever laryngitis.
Girl,
this is
I literally sounded like Lucille Ball, the late Lucille Ball, trying to be drunk off.
Yeah.
It was not you.
Dead legends playing dead legends.
That's amazing.
Playing living legends. Well, Venus, I will see you. I'm going to drag my friend. I think my friend Jamie Sanfilippo, who is obsessed with Madonna, also. I'm going to drag him on Thursday to see you and get my posse of girls to come out with me as well.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Oh, I would love that. Yes, tell him just Madonna, too. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Oh, my God.
A big Madonna party.
A lot of Madonnas in the audience.
Come on, come on.
All right.
It's like a Madonna concert.
Yeah, exactly. Like every other person's dressed as Madonna. But we'll do it in the non-RuPaul's Drag Race way so that we're not all in kimonos, as Pearl said.
Oh, my God. I'm getting started on that.
Oh, we'll definitely get you. Because I know that being the ultimate Madonna fan, like, you must have been plucked, bitch, when everybody came out with a repetitive Madonna outfit.
I was repulsed. I thought it was like the biggest shit show I've ever seen. I'm just like, you know, this woman has so many looks, has set so many trends, and it's like, you know, we're everybody's coming out in a kimono. I'm like, first of all, that song wasn't a hit.
It's true.
She performed it on the Grammys, and you know, she didn't even, you know, didn't really, you know, doesn't really sing it at all, you know, anymore. And you know, I was waiting to see, like, you know, like Open Your Heart Madonna or like Super Bowl Madonna or the Mirror Internet Madonna. And Dr. Betty just totally just gagged me with their bedtime stories stuff coming out of her stomach.
Love.
I totally thought she was going to win, and she gets kicked off. And I'm like, what the hell does, there's like, RuPaul have like some kind of hate against Madonna or something? Because, I mean, the one person who truly gave the essence of Madonna was Acid that night.
Well,
I'm
sorry, but when it comes down to it, ultimately, we said this when we were kind of like doing the weekly reviews or whatever of the show. If you've got four people or whatever who all look the same, and one person who is noticeably different in a very, very positive way, no matter what, that person needs to stay because the other four couldn't even be creative enough to come up with their own fucking look.
Exactly.
So it's like, what is going on here? What is at play?
Right.
Right.
I really did, you know, I thought in terms of look on the runway, she was a hands-down winner. I also thought it was really clever of Bob because Bob did choose a very, I wouldn't say it's an iconic look, but it's definitely a recognizable look.
Right.
I just don't understand how when you have a person who's got the career that Madonna does that has been marked by legitimately dozens of iconic looks that were so memorable at a glance that you're going to get that many drag queens choosing kimonos. Give me a break.
Right.
Give me a break, bitch.
Right. And it's like, how does the producers not know about it? You know, I mean...
They tried it, girl. They tried it.
I don't get it. I mean, should have had me judge.
Exactly. As an alumni of the show, and it's like the foremost impersonator, you should have been there. But they didn't have to hire you to judge. You were judging from home, like the rest of us. All right, Dolph.
Oh, yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to reconnecting with you when you're here in the city. So you come up tomorrow, y'all.
I can't wait, darling. Yeah, I'm coming in tomorrow. I'll be in tomorrow afternoon. I'm definitely pulling an all-nighter tonight because there's so much I got to get done, and
for sure.
Everybody else has to get done. So I'm not driving. I'm going to sleep in the little bus every day tomorrow. So.
Okay. Well, I'll just
definitely being an on-road diva tomorrow.
So I'll shoot you a little texty text tomorrow afternoon to see where you guys are at and if there's anything I can help with.
Fabulous, darling. Thank you so much.
No problem. And we are really happy to have had you on our podcast. So I will see you soon.
Right, see you soon, darling.
Bye. Well, that was a good old Kiki girl.
Of course.
Bitch, I was gagged. She said sun-dried fruit.
She said detox.
Girl, now don't go get in it twisted. She did not say that detox is a sun-dried fruit. But she absolutely said some bitches end up looking like a sun-dried fruit.
Right.
Dead. Okay. All right, you guys. We're going to take another quick break, and we will be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this.
Hey, y'all. It's Del Shores of Sorted Lives fame, and just in case you didn't know who you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl. Yeah, that's the trash you're listening to. Bye.
This is Emmy-nominated choreographer and star of VH1's Brooke Knows Best and E's Men of the Strip, Glenn Douglas Packard, and you're listening to Party Foul Radio with Poyo and Pearl. My directorial debut, the new indie horror film Pitchfork, is now available. Grab your popcorn, go to your iTunes, your smart TV, or on demand, and enjoy the Pitchfork experience.
All right, you guys, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poyo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
And we just heard some great interviews. We had Venus Delight on. Be sure, if you are in the Bay Area, to catch Venus Delight this coming Thursday, honey. That is the 12th of January. She's going to be at San Francisco's Oasis Nightclub with her play Madonna Dearest. And, honey, let me tell you, Pearl is sitting here just in a tizzy because the rain in San Francisco is not playing today, boo.
No,
this weather is not cooperating.
Right, and I still got to get home.
She's still got to get home. And, you know, by the time she gets home, all that wetness in her hair, she's gonna have a dripping Jerry curl. She's going to look like Rick James.
I'm Rick James.
Your hair will just be all dripping down around you. I'm Rick James.
I look cute, but it's not going to happen. I don't know what I'm going to do. Anyway.
If you guys think we're playing and joking around about this rain and the storm that's happening here in San Francisco, no, ma'am. I just got a Facebook update saying that my sister, Miso Horne, was on a train, on a BART train,
right,
coming home from work, and a tree had blown on the tracks, and the train straight up hit the tree, and, right, like, luckily, it didn't derail or anything, but they were stranded, girl. They had to send a rescue train to snatch them up. No, just scoop up all the passengers.
Oh, fuck, so they have to get out of the train, stand in the rain for the next train, wait for them to move that train the opposite direction before they could get out of there.
That is my strong guess.
That sucks.
Yeah, girl, that is not cute.
No.
So, the power has been going in and out all around town and
girl,
whatever.
It better not do it here. Girl, it better not.
Oh, we got to save.
Right.
I'd be so through. Like, sitting here by candlelight, just furious.
Girl, that would be my cue to go.
I only have two candles in this house. I'd have to look around.
How do you only have two candles when you knew it was gonna be a storm?
Girl, how many fucking candles am I supposed to have in my house? I didn't even say water, girl. I'm not even like serving you earthquake preparedness up in this place, much less storm preparedness. My big hope is that it doesn't get a flash flood. I sure did move some sandbags in front of my door. Because a couple years ago, I came home after dropping off a gentleman caller, and there had been a flash flood. Girl, I came in, walked in, there was like 3 inches of rain in my house. I had to scoop it up and put it in the shower and put it out the door with like pots and pans, and then spent hours vacuuming up water.
Girl, I need you to get a car again.
Yeah. Oh, fucking cart you around? No, yes, ma'am, Pam. I ain't driving you, Miss Daisy.
Whatever, bitch.
So, all right, Pearl, what is your weekend looking like? It's Martin Luther King weekend. You can celebrate your person of colorness.
Right. So, one thing, when you guys hear this, this evening, I will actually be at Amara Tisa's
fashion show.
Yeah, her fashion show. She's showing off her vinyl collection. This weekend, I actually have that wedding gig that I was telling you guys about a while ago.
Come on, wedding gig.
It'll be my first time, like...
That's John and Tom, right?
Yeah, I'm so excited. Congratulations, John and Tom.
Yes.
I'll be performing with them, and...
Good for you guys keeping the budget low wedding.
They wanted a real performer, not someone who's going to stand around and look like a clown.
Well...
Anyway.
Yeah, so, I don't know, girl.
So I'm doing that, and then...
So they wanted somebody who's going to do cartwheels, like, looking like a clown.
Whatever, bitch.
She's like, just show me to the liquor, bitches!
Right. I don't know. I'm a little
scared. Y'all just sitting here pressing on her titties. It is very disturbing.
I'm scared. I'm scared to do cartwheels because it's going to hurt.
Oh, my God. She's like, I'm scared. I'll hold my titties because I'm so scared.
Right.
You guys know that Pearl's breasts can tell the weather. She said that her breasts, after she went outside, informed her that it's already raining right now.
But after that, I will be down in Sacramento performing for Helen Hills. One hell of a show.
Come on, Helen Heels.
Yeah, she's doing like a San Francisco invasion in Sacramento. So that'll be fun. And then I will have my official return
to San Francisco.
To the stage, but here in San Francisco the following week on the 22nd at Pollo Kids.
Yes, so come out. If you are listening to this and you want to see Perliqua and the new twins return to the stage here in San Francisco, join us on January 22nd at the Cafe for the Glamazone. Pearl Tease's return.
Yes.
Return of the Tease.
Right.
So, and then on the 29th, if you're a new performer looking to get your chance to hit the stage at the Cafe, hit me up on all social media because I'm casting now the Glamazone's New Talent Showcase 17.
Who do we have already, signed up for it?
Let's see. We've got Shanghai.
All right.
And we've got Sarah Converted. We've got Dee Dee Derange going to be performing on that show. We've got Echo is going to be performing. She's a new performer that I've heard a lot about. My daughter, Cinder Rose, was telling me a lot about her. Who else is on this? So Amy Bathhouse is going to be doing it.
Okay.
So those are the names that are confirmed right now. The spots are going to be filling up really quickly, though. Those girls wait till the last minute to get in. But I know that everybody's referring their friends. Melissa Skunt just performed or tagged it, so she's going to be referring it to all the new queens that she competed against. If you have the opportunity locally to see Melissa Skunt,
she's amazing.
Beyond amazing. She's a true talent, and she just mopped up that talent at the local Butch Queen pageant. So she won my last new talent showcase, and she just won the Butch Queen pageant. So congratulations, Melissa.
All right. Girl, all these new queens coming out, like I don't even try to keep up anymore.
I can't keep up. But I am really excited because on February 11th at Oasis is going to be the annual Star Search competition, which is a huge contest. And it's the 10-year anniversary of my victory, actually, at the Star Search competition in 2006. So this is the 10th one since then. And there's going to be some really cool people competing in that. I've got my fingers crossed. I'm personally pulling for my daughter, Intensive Claire, but there's a lot of really qualified candidates who are going to be competing in that competition on February 11th. We'll talk more about that, I guess, as we get closer to that time. Meanwhile, do you have any closing words, Pearl?
Well, don't forget to visit our sponsors over at Magazine at liveleft.com.
And follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Party Foul Radio.
On Twitter and Facebook.
Thank you, Pearl. OMG. Okay. I think that's it. Before she says anything else stupid, we're going to cut out here.
All right, girls.
We'll see you guys, or we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for joining us, and
bye.
Bye. It's over.